evening, everybody. I will call the November 4th, 2019 HPC regular session to order. Roll call, please.
Chair Dan Huff.
Here.
Vice Chair Dan Beal.
Here.
Commissioner Tim Bowen.
Here.
Commissioner Steve Hannestad.
Here.
Commissioner Gail Munden.
Here.
Commissioner Michael Wilson.
Here.
Thank you. We didn't receive any blue cards, but if anyone in the audience wants to make a comment, just fill one of those out and we'll work that in. Council liaison comments.
Well, actually, I do have some. Okay. And they can be very pertinent to Historic Preservation Commission regarding Steam Pump Ranch and the continued lack of funding. As you know, the golf course issue has been before council. And so I need to give you a little bit of background information on that. The golf course is funded by two sources: direct revenue collected from the golf operations and a half-cent sales tax that was approved. There's been an enormous amount of false information out there regarding the golf course and its expenditures, its income versus its expenses. The half-cent sales tax currently generates about $2.2 to $2.3 million. The golf course revenues are generating $1.something million. When you combine those two revenue sources, there's actually it's in the black by over $500,000 this past year. And we've done a lot of detailed projections over the last 6 months, and they've been very conservative projections. So if you look at the sales tax revenue, it actually continues on up to over the years, where in the next 5 years you may be about $3 million or so. However, if you look at the expenses, the golf course, with a lot of savings staff is implemented, the expenses are dropping down to where the tax revenue needed to break even out of the $3 million may get down as low as $1 million, $1.5 million max. So you're now looking at a half-cent sales tax that may be generating in excess of $1 to $1.5 million to $2 million a year in the near future. So the thought is, what do we do with that money? Obviously, you can leave it in the golf course fund and use it for the community. When I say golf course, it's golf course, community center, tennis courts, use it for that. But there's also some thought about, well, maybe we should look at allocating part of that to other parks and rec programs, something like Steam Pump, where obviously we need money to, and large amounts of money, to do restoration projects. And you'd have two options. You could save and pay as you go, or you could say, wait a minute, interest rates are real low. Our rating for the town has gone up to A++. And on a tax-exempt bond, we're looking at below 2% right now. Construction costs are inflating at 6% a year. Restoration costs may be even higher because it's so specialized. So if you look at that, you say, wait a minute. Instead of waiting 5 years, and if I'm looking at 6 to 10% construction costs per year, but I can borrow for 2%, I'm way far better off borrowing money and doing it now. Plus, now the public has the benefit of its use 5 years sooner. And the way you bond, and a lot of you folks have been in a lot of this, you may know, is you need a revenue source, dedicated revenue source. Well, if that half-cent sales tax is considered an excellent revenue source, steady, fairly recession-resistant, and you would use a portion of that to say for, like, Proctor Lieber, say it was decided that indeed it was a worthwhile project, $2 million was a good price, and all you bond the $2 million for 5 or 10 years, and you'd pay it off with part of that half-cent sales tax. Now, that's just a possibility, but it's something that, you know, is probably going to be coming up for more discussion in the next year or two. But, you know, I keep thinking how there's never any money for Steam Pump, and the thing with Steam Pump is everything costs a decent amount of money. It's not like we need $50 for a rake or a shovel, or we need $10,000 to do this or that. The restorations are getting up there, and it really hasn't been getting a heck of a lot of money put towards it. We all know that. So that's something I wanted to mention. As the golf issue is settled down, the decision was for 36 holes, all those projections, and they were, like I said once again, extremely conservative. They did not include increases in membership. you know, looked at gruesome detail of all the expenses, all the income and everything. So, and it's been trending this way for a long time now. You know, if you just listen to the public, you think the golf course is bankrupting the town and its expenses are skyrocketing. It's just the opposite. So there is the potential for some real money being there, where, you know, for Parks and Rec. So that's just something I want to bring to your attention as to what's going on.
Okay, thank you, Councilman.
Thank you.
We'll move on to informational items. Number one, current information for HPC commissioners.
Okay, I did send you all some information. Again, repeating what I have been doing recently, which is letting you know about the National Registry of Historic Places. So this time the first little piece is what is the National Registry of Historic Places for anybody who wants a review. But underneath that, because I think it is, especially as we're trying to move forward with these local registries, and I think it's pertinent for our information to know, if your house is in a historic district or listed on a registry, local registry, same difference really, because we don't have a district in the town, but does that raise or lower values? And there's a lot of experts that are on the second sheet of all of that, and they all say yes, that your values remain or go higher in most communities. And so if you're talking about that we're going that way and that we have interest that way, and you talk to guest homeowners or whatever, that can be just a piece of information that you share, that their values across the nation show that they're either stable or it makes them more valuable. So I thought that would be fun to share. This part about Save America's Treasure and there being a grant available, I have sent that on and we'll see if we can't get that written. But I thought that that was interesting and fun to let you know that those are an annual grant that is out there that we can write for. And just by being part of the Save America's Treasures, which is how come I get to go to National Historic Preservation Conferences, because we are a member, we can write for those grants. But on the back, the headline is on the bottom, what is your cup of choco? I thought that was fun. They just found remains of cocoa in cups in Chaco Canyon. And then these are all hyperlinked. The other information, there's hyperlinks to sign up for things or listen to podcasts or other items that I thought would be interesting to you, that you can just open those links. So just that part's more fun than what I have been doing, but I thought I'd throw it in there. So, yeah, if anybody has any questions.
May I make a statement?
Uh-huh. Sure.
Okay. I want to thank Lynn-Ann very much for the information you provided me. I was asked at my long real estate office to give a presentation on the Grove Valley Historical Preservation Commission. They have like 200 agents. Anyway, I reached out to Lynn-Ann for information on that, and it was very well received. I put together a little booklet for the agents, and thank you so much for that.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that.
Oh, that's great. Number two, the report from the Historical Society president. I don't think Roxy's here. Mr. Loomis?
Yeah, Roxy asked me to provide the report because she's attending to her husband who's caught the flu. So what I'd like to do is, we had our board meeting 2 weeks ago, and we discussed a lot of different things. And we've updated our website. We've gotten our archives are now able to be found, and our articles are now able to be found, and the donation button and the membership buttons all work, so it's all tied into PayPal now. So the website is up and running and has been significantly improved. Our collections committee had their monthly meeting, and their major project right now is updating their policy and processes for how they handle materials that are donated to the society and how they handle loans and donations. The other thing that they did at the end of October was they attended the Southern Arizona Archivist Bazaar down at the Arizona State Museum and had a display table and made some good contacts with other museums and people with the Arizona State Museum. I have, the society has been very active out at Steampunk Ranch on Saturdays recently, starting in October and going on through December. Starting next week, we will be having our Kris Kringle Market. And let me pass out some of the advertisements here for y'all, if you can pass those out to everybody so that they can see what they are, what it is. Basically, we will be having a booth at Steampunk Ranch every Saturday selling German Christmas ornaments and stuff based on the German heritage of the ranch. We have been very successful with our display about the Romero family that we had in the push house, and which is we've moved parts of it up to the library, so it's on display up in the library. We've changed the exhibit in the push house to the German Christmas, and so that the inside of the house is now decorated to support the German style Christmas 1870s, early 1900 time frame. We won't be having any of the candles lit on the trees.
There are some fake candlelights.
Yeah, there are fake.
I was arranging them today. Yeah. Okay.
I've never seen anything going wrong with candles on a tree.
The other thing that I'd like to highlight is this morning, the Society is a member of the American Association for State and Local History, which is a nationwide organization that supports museums and provides information to both large and small groups and societies. And they just issued a report called the National Visitation Report, which talks about the trends with visitors in museums and small historic parks and historic buildings and things like that. And the key takeaways from the report are that the small institutions had the strongest gains in the last 5 years. And their average, and those were the small institutions with an income of less than $50,000, which is the category that the Historical Society falls into. And they had an 18% increase in visitation from 2013 to 2018. The next group from 50,000 to 250,000 reported a 12.7% increase. And historic museums had a 10.7% increase in attendance. The historic sites had a 10.2%, and historic houses had an 8.8% increase in visitation. And there is they have done a formal report, and if any of you are interested in it, I can certainly forward the email to you. And if you can't read it, we can certainly add you to all the members of the society are eligible to see that report. So if there's any questions on that, or if you'd be interested in getting it, in reading the report, we can certainly get it for you. Let's see, the other thing is that, as I said, we're going to be out at the Steampunk Ranch every Saturday from now until the 21st of December with both the Kris Kringle Market, and we will have our booth there, and we will have docents inside the push house. The attendance that we've had at the push house during non-second Saturday weeks has been significant. The first time we opened it, which was a week after, it was probably around the 15th of October, we had over 75 people come in and tour the house. Last week we had probably 25, and the week before that we had 40 plus people come in. So it is, people do go out there. If you push them from, we push them from the farmer's market, and if it's open, they are attending it and enjoying.
Okay, and thank you.
If there are any questions, I'm certainly welcome any questions.
Any questions? Okay, thank you, Mr. Loomis. Commissioner Munden, do you have any updates?
I had the flu pretty bad.
Okay.
No, and I think it's going to be handled in December, so.
Okay, well, that's a good reason to not.
I got it on the plane.
Okay, regular session, agenda number one. Discussion and possible action regarding the planning division work plan for fiscal year 19-20 and then fiscal year 20 and 21.
By your bell.
When should I put your ear? That's this thing, right?
Is that fun?
Can I like it? There's what we're talking about. Interested in the
thank you, Chair.
Yes.
Hi, everyone. Barbella. I'm the town's planning manager. And been fulfilling that, acting in that capacity for the past 20 years or so. Usually about at least every two years, I stop by the Historic Preservation Commission to generate the same conversation that I'm hoping to push forward today, if you will. So every 2 years marks a new start as far as working on our work plan. It's our to-do list for planning staff is really the bottom line. Fancy name, but it's a to-do list. And what we do is we always make sure that we check in with the commission make sure that at least from the zoning end of things, ask if there's anything we can do for you. So we seek recommendations as far as our to-do list, and ultimately that goes to the Planning and Zoning Commission as well as Town Council. And inevitably, we have a list that's born of general plan action items, a couple of hundred different general action items out of the plan. And that gets filtered through the Council's strategic plan, which is done every 2 years. The general plan's every 10 years. So there are roughly 5 strategic plans along the way, and in those increments, we try to bang work out to fill a promise in delivering what we said we do as part of the general plan. So where we are right now is coming by and asking if there was any related items that warrant extra look-see. The number one thing that's reflected in the general plan, maybe the cultural resources, is making sure that as far as where it intersects with zoning, because in zoning we review development proposals, is that our strategies when a development comes in to review and make sure archaeological or historical sites are treated appropriately. And the last action item that we spent a good year and a half, 2 years with a former Historic Preservation Commission was feeding our archaeological requirements in terms of the process, the sequential process to do surveys, check with SHPO, and marching forward to identify any resources that may or may not warrant a treatment plan. There are treatment plans because there's an advanced level of a find. They would come before you. We haven't had any of those in the last year and a half. That code section has been updated as part of the environmentally sensitive lands ordinance. From that perspective, we saw the staff report that we sent out. We went through a committee much here to be all ears. If there are any suggestions or concerns that you can help relative to zoning. And back towards you, Chair.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions?
Do we have any issues? And my question is, are there any issues that we need to deal with zoning on our at this ranch or at
no,
historic preservation?
There may be some more topics that we'll work with you on. I've brought it to you before as we're moving forward with our local registry of historic places, but there's a lot of talk on that and not a lot of movement, so you haven't seen a lot of movement from us. Other than that, yeah.
Okay, number two is review and approval of the October 7th minutes from our last meeting. Does anyone have any additions, modifications, revisions?
So I do have a couple things. I'm
yes.
Not on the commission. But on the part where you're talking about my report, it said Mrs. Dellerman reviewed the rehabilitation tax credit with the commission and provided information on how the historic homeowners, not the commission, could benefit.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Anything else?
Well, then I wonder, did you read yours at all? What she wrote on yours? Because she says, the Proctor Lieber House is considered a historic piece by the state of Arizona, not figuring that's probably how you worded that.
No. Could I review it and then just send her a memo on it?
Yeah, I can tell you what it is, and you can tell me if you. It is contributing structure on the National Historic Preservation Registry that Epstein
yeah,
grants.
Thanks for the lingo there.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it is. And so
he,
I imagine.
He endorses that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so if there's no other additions, do I have a motion to approve? I'm sorry, go ahead, Commissioner.
It's a mere typo, but I believe the statement Oral Valley resident and Tracy Alexander, I don't think the word and is needed right there. That's just the only thing I saw.
Okay. Okay, so given those three amendments, do we have a motion to approve?
I move to approve the meeting minutes from October 7th, 2019.
Okay, with those amendments.
With the corrections.
And we have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay, those are approved. Number three, discussion and possible action on the public-private partnership for the renovation of the Proctor Lieber House. Is that you, Lillian?
Yeah, so I'm just going to review and then leave it for you guys to discuss at the end. But last month, Vice Chair Dan Beal explained what an RFP is. So I'll briefly remind you. So he talked about that in the city of Tucson, we can all remember the long process that the Rio Nuevo went through and how they spent a lot of money just getting the basic paperwork in place before coming up with private-public partnerships, which were then able to move Rio Nuevo forward. And so then he explained the RFP process, which is just putting out to the right people the opportunity to make a proposal. And it would be multiple people who it would go out to, and multiple would be expected back. One of those could likely be Dan Adams, who spoke to the commission a couple months ago. And so basically, that was just a discussion item. If you guys wanted to have anyone from the town move forward with that, this time it is a possible action, so you can make a request for something more if you want. So that was just a review if you want to direct town to do anything.
Yes.
Well, just to elaborate, there's many directions the city may want to go. They may want to go with a nonprofit charitable contribution to help fund renovation. They may want to go with private partnership. It would be nice to find out from the city council or where their focus, what they want, so that we could advocate or help get some momentum on this and move it forward.
Commissioner Mundell.
By law, we have to advertise it to the public.
Yeah, it would be advertised to the public. Yes.
Certain people, so I just want to make everyone know that.
But you still
we can't pick and choose.
No, but you want to make sure the right eyes see it, so you need to get it somehow.
It may be in the Explorer. Or right.
I believe the terminology is we can encourage people that we feel could be well qualified.
Yes.
Yes.
But that's perfectly legit, but you can't hide it.
No. It would be go out to the public. But just to also let everybody know, our procurement officer just retired. That would be the person, town staff member, that would help this move forward. We did have a meeting with him a few months ago, and he felt like it was a good idea, but we would really be starting grassroots again, and that's where maybe some other ideas, what does the town want, what does the council want? But we also need to hear from you all what you would like and what you suggest.
Who would make the appropriate decision once these all start coming in as far as with whom we'd like to partner? How does that process work?
Well, the procurement officer would review them and take those that are logical, and there would probably be a vetting process among other managers within the town structure that approved those types of things, and once there was down to the final few, it would come before the commission here. You would be a part of that.
Thank you.
Commissioner Mundell. Mm-hmm.
So, first off, we don't know if there's going to be any budget increases for the ranch in next year's budget, correct? With the request for proposals, Oro Valley doesn't have a good reputation as far as being able to deal with people. And this just seems like a nightmare to me. I just don't see it going anywhere. I mean, I know we have Ed Dan Adams, but he's like listening to, it's a little vague about the relationship that's going to be required from them. And I don't know. I just don't see it as, how do we start it? But we don't even have anyone to represent it.
So I think we have to go in with an open mind and actually present multiple directions that the city could go. It could either go nonprofit, it could go public private partnership. It could go many different directions, or they may want to wait another decade and maintain total control of the property. But at least I think it should be at least get their true temperature, and then the whole process kind of, it's almost like an auction. It gets a number of vendors that want to lease that land and bid for the highest, best use, and the city could make a decision, or they could turn them all down. So there's minimum risk, except because the private partnership would be doing the feasibility study.
Yes.
I think the more fundamental question before us is, do we even want to go for a RFP type of action before we have thoroughly looked at the possibility of charitable donation? I've had a lot of experience working with mixed government and private facilities. The worst example of those being where a presidential library and a presidential foundation are co-located. And the one is entirely political, and the one attempts to be entirely non-political, and one of them attempted to burn down last week because the foundation thought putting an aircraft hangar in with Air Force One in it was more important than maintaining the setback from the fire safety zone. So I'm always a little bit leery, even when the so-called public-private sector arrangement is between a nonprofit and a government. Their interests are never the same. And one of the things that I was afraid of in listening to the proposal from Mr. Adams was that he was trying to set up really a commercial venue. And when you set up a commercial venue, you then start getting into questions of freedom of speech. Is it a public free speech zone? Is it a restricted free speech zone? Does the town retain any control over who may rent the facility and for what purpose? And I personally would rather it not be used for political parties to hold their meetings, but that's just me. But the city would lose a lot of that control if it, in essence, completely turned over the operation. And I'm sorry to use a rather partisan example to show you how badly a public-private cooperation can go. The old post office building in Washington, D.C., a historic building, which was leased on an RFP, and the government completely lost control of how that facility was to be used. So I would rather see us explore possible charitable options.
Charitable,
again, even charitable contributions, you want to be careful as to whose money you accept. I mean, in the past, I had to refuse Enron money because it just didn't look properly clean, and we had to refuse money from Philip Morris. So, but that's something that the town can pretty well figure out what its value system is and who is an acceptable donor and who is not. But I think we should look at donations. I think the councilman's offer of information about the possible use of additional or excess revenue, I believe you call it. Before we get into putting out an RFP, and in particular, if we do not have a very experienced procurement officer in place, I would suggest that we completely table the idea of issuing an RFP until we have the specialized staff that is needed to drive an effort like that.
Is that your motion?
There was a discussion.
Well, I'd like to comment on that too.
Yep.
So, whether it's a nonprofit, just like you mentioned, they could have the same ulterior motive that may not be of benefit of the city versus a private enterprise. And the beauty of putting it out, whether it's to a nonprofit or a private partnership, either one could be dictated by the city as to the caveats that, for example, you want a non-political venue. That could be built into, they have clear discretion to turn down any RFP that does not meet the city's and the public's best interest.
Again, talking from practical experience, some nonprofits are more powerful than others, and you can go into the negotiation and the contract terms with the best possible caveats put in ahead of time, but once the other organization actually takes possession and operation of the facility, you can't catch them creeping by an inch. And that's what you face.
If I can add, my view is, different folks knew different things at different times, but when Mr. Adams came forward with his proposal, he really came out of nowhere to a lot of people. And I think that there's this sense that we don't exactly know what's out there in the community or the greater metro area or even the state or beyond that would be interested in steam pump. are in any sort of partnership. And I think that's my view is the impetus behind doing this is casting a net and seeing what's out there. I don't think I'd support anything that tied the town's hands or limited the town's ability to govern really what goes on at that property. But I think my perspective, again, is just to see what's out there. A lot of people or organizations that have money that they'd be interested in investing may not even know that that's an opportunity because the town hasn't positioned itself that way. So I think that that's just something to keep in mind. I'm supportive in moving forward with the process. I think it's so early on to think that we'd be hamstrung as a commission or the town in that way at this point, at least.
Another option would be an RFI, which is a request for information, because that's just the precursor to an RFP, and then you find out who is interested when you cast that net, and then you can get more specific. But just to talk about the history of steam pump, there has been requests for people to just throw money at it. It has not come to any fruition. One of the things that both the Historical Society and former commissions have recognized is that many people come from big cities where there are people who say, I want to put money into that historic structure. I want to live there. That doesn't happen in a teeny tiny town. It just doesn't happen. The reason why this is even a discussion point is because many members of the commission have over time said, when is something going to happen there? Well, unless these new funds come to fruition, it's going to still be a while. There aren't just discretionary funds that the town has, and there isn't a big response from community to throw money there. So this is just an idea. So and it would need direction by you all if you wanted something to happen with it. It can also be sat on until we find out, what's going to happen with the 0.5% sales tax.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I like the idea of the RFI. The other thing I'd be concerned about is that no matter what we do, that the commercial, whatever enterprise that we require to get money from as it gets approved, doesn't overshadow the historical.
Yeah, no, it would have limitations.
And we can't let that happen.
There would be a checklist. I mean, that would be part
Absolutely.
Of the process.
And I know that, but I just that's my concern.
Commissioner Bell.
I think Commissioner Aniston raises some good points. I'd like to ask someone who has been a procurement officer any other potential downsides other than uses that we don't anticipate that could result from not having an experienced procurement official putting the RFP together.
Yeah, the biggest problem if you are doing it with a nonprofit is the possibility that their funding projections went awry, and then you have the possibility that they may have made commitments that they cannot take care of, and it's very hard to get rid of them early in the term of a contract. In terms of doing it with a for-profit entity, a commercial business, whether it's established or specifically forms a partnership for the bid, there you'll find that there'll be extremely little interest if you have a shorter than a 5-year cancellation clause in it. And so if they start to do something that you don't like, you may be stuck with it for 5 years. So these are things to be considered. To a certain extent, you can mitigate it by going through an RFI, and I don't know what state or town regulations are, but on the federal level, if you do an RFI, you can then limit the people who respond to the RFP to the people that were successfully passed through the RFI vetting. So that's a question I don't know for sure, but if the town resources are such that they could conduct an RFI, then I would certainly favor that approach. On the other hand, if the purchasing department is short of leadership, I would say let's carry it over 6 months and make a recommendation then.
But couldn't our recommendation spur the town to hire that person sooner?
I think that there's
we know
a
it's
plan
important.
To hire.
Tom, just leave it at that.
Yeah. The what?
They know it's an important position.
Yeah,
just leave
yeah.
It at that.
There's a
well,
plan in
I don't,
place.
I don't see why we should table it for 6 months. I mean, it's going to take long enough anyway.
Well, and regardless of what you all choose to do here with this, we can't move it forward with the town staff until we have the procurement officer place anyway. So.
Right, so why not just go ahead and
before the record
and start yeah, the request for information.
So all you're doing is making a recommendation that staff try
right.
to further that. That's right. the only thing that because
we can do.
Yeah.
When appropriate.
Would a motion be in order now?
Yes.
I would like to make a motion to recommend to staff that they proceed to request consideration or request preparation of an RFI on the utilization of steam pump ranch.
I second the motion.
Any discussion, further discussion on that motion? I like that it's generally written, so it's really the town staff can go many directions. Do you guys want to vote on it? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstention? Motion carries. Linnea, did you get the verbiage of that one? Or it's a, okay.
He's got it recorded.
You can go back to it. Number four, report providing more information on last month's call to the audience from Ms. Tracy Alexander.
Okay, so I will start it, and then because she is the expert on what she talked about with us, we'll go ahead and let Tracy speak. But as far as I know, you haven't submitted to the Board of Adjustments yet, so that was one thing I wanted you to know. And then I also wanted you to know, and I did talk to her about this, is that I called SHPO because I wanted a little bit more clarification on the garage being detached, and that is one of the treatments that they often recommend for the same reason she talked about, because... well, first of all, you've got a historic structure and you're putting a brand new structure against it, even though it's in place of a part of that structure that existed prior. So it can go either way, and they're okay with either, because most people who have just a carport do want to enclose it into a garage. And so that is one of the acceptable treatments, depending on how you do it. And meaning the Alexanders, did use... from Corky Post and Murto, the architect Murto, to get their design so that they would fit those historic preservation requirements. So I'll let the Alexanders speak to this issue.
Should I come around here?
Yeah.
Sure. Well, I just want to thank you all for hearing us, and I think it was you who recommended to go out your so thank you, Mr. Wilson. I really appreciate that. My husband is passing around wine and a bunch of attachments just to help me follow along. It can get a little technical. So we purchased this home in February this year after having lived in it about 5 miles away in Royal Valley already. And this home was built, just to refresh your memory, in 1959 by Thomas Gibbs, who was a local architect. He had about 170 homes that he designed and built over his career. Many of them are in Tucson, and many of them have been preserved. And the first attachment is our home, with the carport view there on the left. When we bought the house, we found out that the Historic Preservation Commission was already in talks with the previous owners about putting the home on the historic registry at a local level to be one of the first private residences in Laurel Valley on the registry. And we loved that idea. We loved the house. It's one of the reasons we bought it. And so we continued to talk to Lynette about it and also tell her that we needed to build a garage or wanted to build a garage to replace the carport. She hooked us up with John Murto. It's changed now to Murto. The poster was Murto McDonald.
Oh.
Frost left.
Oh, okay.
Frost is gone, and everybody moved up standards with the Secretary of Interior that produces standards for how to make additions and changes to historic properties and still preserve the integrity of those structures. So that makes it compatible but different. And if you look at the attachment 2 and 3, you can see the site plan. I apologize how tiny it is. We shrank it down from one of those big blueprint size pages, and of course I asked the ratio to fit onto an 8.5 by 11, but that is the design that we have right now with John, and then page 3 is the rendering of what the house with the garage detached other than the roof would look like, just to be sort of the idea that we're going for. So with our plans in hand, we submitted a permit application to the town of Green Valley, and were denied for a couple of reasons, and two particular technical ones. One is a setback from the street, which is really the sticking point. So we were unfamiliar or misunderstood what the requirements were. So there's this space in the middle of a street, and you have to go 30 feet on either side, which makes 15 feet into your land is still this part of the street. And then from that property, from that line is where your property starts. And then you go 30 feet into that is where your structure can start. So in essence, it's 45 feet in total from the edge of the street, which is pretty far. So in order to keep the garage off the house, we need to move it forward toward the road 5 feet. So unfortunately, that puts us 5 feet into the setback. So we're going for a 5 foot variance with the zoning board adjustments. So we'd be 40 feet from the road and 25 feet from the setback. That's ultimately what our goal is. The other little snag was that there's also a zoning code that you can't have a freestanding building in front of the main structure on a property. So you can't have a garage by itself in front of a house. So we're going to rejigger the roof so that the house slants down, and we were going to have the garage slant down the same direction, but now they're going to slant into each other. We're going to tie them together at the roof and make a gutter for water drainage. So,
which is attachment?
Which also is attachment 8, I think. And I have them.
Yeah, that's the roof that's house in two directions.
So that's sort of the rendering that might look like. We think we solved it. And I did talk to Patty Hayes about that particular client, and she said that would pass that zoning law test. So our options are build a garage and attach to the house, which you heard Dan say really is kind of frowned upon because we would have to cover up the front of the house burnt adobe wall. You can't build structurally onto a burnt adobe anymore without some crazy engineering, which way too expensive for us. And it would be covered up forever because we'd have to frame it and drywall it and it would be gone. So that's not appealing to us. Enclosing the carport was a possibility, but the roof is rotten, and I've shown some pictures in there on attachment 5,
whatever that was called,
where it's rotting. It's the original carport that's been painted over thousands of times, but it's water is just taking its toll on it. So that carport roof has to come down. So we can't just enclose it and put walls around it. The other thing is it's a weird shape, and if you look at page or attachment 6, you can see the overhead view of the garage space and the wall. It's not square to the house, so that it narrows toward the back, and it's just not really a functional space for two cars, and we also have a golf cart, which is our problem, but we would like to put it away. It is a golf course, anyway. And the other problem is, in order to maintain the slope of the roof, the sidewall at the street side would be so low that it wouldn't even fit a garage door open because it would just have to slant down so far. It would just be really odd and wonky. So that option seemed out. So our third option is to apply for the zoning variance for 5 feet, move out the house, build a two-car garage. Just for a little added power, just a little bit about the GIST activities related to that context and establishes significance and integrity for nominating a property to be on the historic registry nationally.
Yeah.
Currently, there is a draft at the state level about Thomas Gibbs properties, and our house is on that list. So it's currently under review, and if and when SHPO, which you mentioned earlier, and the Historic Sites Review Committee on Long Beach approves this document, that would set the path for this home to be nominated either by us as the owners or by the town of Warren Valley for consideration at the state and local level for national and state registry. So that's another added reason why we just don't want to touch the house with our garage. Another thing is that someone said that, you know, Gibbs did not design homes with garages, which is true, because when he started designing homes, not everyone had a car. It just wasn't a mainstream thing. Now that he's, as decades went on and became more mainstream, he did design homes with garages. So we're not building a garage in a place that doesn't belong. But he did have a style about it, where if the property was wide enough, the garage would be put on the side of the house with the entrance to the side. And if it wasn't wide enough, such as our property, it was in front of the house with the doors opening at a 90 degree to the front door so that you would come in from the side and enter. Oh, wow. So there's no garage door ever facing the street.
It's a hog nose.
Is that what it's called?
If the garage faces the front. Yeah, especially if it sticks out and you only have like one part, that's a hog nose.
Oh, I know. So I did attach in attachment 7 an excerpt from the National Register of Historic Places under the Department of Interior talking about the artwork and how he did this design later on in his architecture. So that's not an unprecedented thing to go. So we did have John Berto out to our house several times. He's pretty excited about our house. And he designed the garage in the Gibbs style. He used burnt adobe bricks, using ribbon windows, as you can see in the rendering, which are these skinny, narrow, short windows.
Are those going to, you can't tell on, is it the second, third page?
Right.
Are there going to be those little skinny windows in the garage?
Now, they're positioned on the back wall of the garage, so
okay.
They face the golf course. I personally would like to move them around to the front for continuity.
So it looks like the
it would just be a matter of cost. Yeah, so it would look like, but I'm, at this point I'm like, hey, that's funny. So, yes, we would have those ribbon windows, hopefully on the front, definitely on the side. So the other reason for designing off the house is to differentiate that it is similar but different, so that you don't give, you're not trying to pass it off as an original part of the structure.
Right.
So that's another reason to get off the house. We did look at other garage locations on the property. So going to the north side, which would be the side of the carpet's on right now, choose it on the golf course, and HOA CCRs prevent you from having anything within 50 feet of the golf course setback. So we already have gotten approval for 5 feet from them, because we know if you look at the site plan, the little corner of the garage is going to encroach a little bit on that, and they said that was fine. We do have approval for that already. They're not going to approve us moving an entire garage around the side of the house to build it, and then try and enter from that side as well, which is what Gibbs would have done. So it's just not going to happen. They're not going to approve that for us.
Tracy, or the back? Obviously, the back's not practical.
Well, I'll get to that. The right side has a house on it, you know, next to us, so we have 15 feet to work with there. It's just, there's not space. You couldn't even put a one-car garage. And the back, yes, is deep. It's a deep lot. There would technically be space, but it's at minimum more than 200 feet to access the garage to get into a door, which would be all the way around to the front.
Yeah, that's
because
not
good. The original wall that was built around the backyard is burnt adobe. There's no gate. And have no intention of cracking through adobe to make a gate. It's structurally sound now, but it can be fragile as you start cutting into it, and we can't predict where it might crack or crumble. We don't want to do that. And our plan is to have access to the backyard through the garage, through the breezeway. Kind of where we have a little door right now that is about this wide. A wheelbarrow fits in. So that's why we really don't have any other place on the property to put this garage other than where the carport furnace is. So this brings us to the variance request criteria, which I talked to Mr. Solomon about before the meeting. So there's five criteria that you have to meet in order to gain approval from the Board of Adjustments for the zoning variance. And those are at the bottom of page two. The first one is the special circumstance that your house has and the other house has.
Page three, top of page three.
Okay. I think my notes are different. So we think the special circumstances, you know, the 1959 Thomas Gist home that's been well preserved, and there's one other Thomas Gist in our neighborhood, but it's been severely modified on the exterior, and I understand it doesn't qualify as historic anymore. It's a beautiful home, they're friends of ours, but unfortunately before they bought it, it had already been modified. And I did attach attachment 9, which you all are familiar with, is the letter from the U of A College of Architecture asking the former homeowner to pursue historic registry. And I think that's how this whole law got rolling, at least with us. The second criteria is that the variance is not created by the homeowner and the applicant. So we didn't build the house, we didn't build the carport is falling, not falling down, but it's rotting in places. It needs to be replaced with something. So a garage makes sense. So we didn't create the problem, I guess, is what number two is asking. Number three, the variance is necessary for the preservation and enjoyment of property rights. This is a bit ambiguous, I guess, but we feel like 2019, everybody wants a garage to put your stuff in, your cars, it protects from the weather and rodents and pack rats living in your engine and dirt, yes. And you can store your other things in there. We have a golf cart, golf clubs, push carts, and we just
prevents
we need
theft.
A place to put our stuff. number four, authorized. This one's a little technical, but I think this one means that we're not asking for something special that other homeowners can't have. And I feel like that means like we're not going to have open business or build a roller coaster, but also we're not going to build something 5 feet from the road because no one else is going to be allowed to do that. But we do have what we feel is homes that appear to be already encroaching on the 30-foot setback, and those are attachments 10. There's two pictures of overhead through the maps, and I've drawn a little red line to show that the legend of 30 feet at the bottom is 7/16 of an inch. And so I just drew that on with my ruler. And you can see how those two homes, which are just to the left and the right of us, but two or three houses away, have already, and how that got there, we don't know if those homes got a variance, if they were grandfathered in under some other weird.
Is the side setback perhaps different?
But these are the front of the house, and the black line is there. So I'm just measuring off that black line. So they took Google Earth and they imposed the plat map.
That could be wrong, right?
On top of Google Earth. So that's kind of our one of our main points is that we're not precedent setting by asking for 5 feet because there's already two houses in this point, and there's more. Right? I only did two. But those are pretty egregious encroachments into setbacks. So we're not asking for something unusual in our opinion. One of those homes was built in 71, one was built in 75. The town incorporated in 74. I don't know if there was some real in that time frame, but our house was 1959. 1959, and our plat map is exactly the same today as it did back then because of the improvements. So if it changed somehow in the 70s and then went back to what it, I don't know. The fifth criteria is that the variance will not be detrimental to surrounding properties or vicinity. Lots of houses in Oral Valley Estates have garages. Lots of houses have detached buildings of garage, guest quarters, storage sheds. So a detached garage is not an unusual request. It would fit in with the rest of the neighborhood. It's not going to block anyone's view, because if you look at attachment 11, that's a picture of the wall in front of the carport with this slatted structure above it, which is also rotten and needs to come down. That's basically where the wall of the garage will be. So we're not even really moving forward any more than that wall, because it's a wall, so it doesn't have to be 30 feet. It's not a structure. So that's basically where the footprint of the garage will be in that general area there. So we're not blocking anyone's view with something new. There's already something there. So, as a commission, our call to action to y'all is to write a letter individually or collectively and sign it in support of our request for a 5-foot variance to the Board of Adjustment. I understand you can't, as a governing body, make a recommendation. And we're not asking for that. We're asking for a letter just explaining everything that I just did in a more concise way, I guess.
Which staff member have you been speaking to?
Patty Hayes.
Patty Hayes. That's what I thought. So,
She told me that my options were to, you know, get within the 30 feet
uh-huh.
or get out of the 30 feet, or she gave me the application for the zoning variance. And so, and I came in and talked to her. I showed her this rendering. I showed her the site plan, which looked at 5 feet, and she just said she couldn't do it, which I understand. That's,
right.
That's her job, is to evaluate stuff like that. So we were waiting to submit to the city, the town, before we found out if y'all were going to help us.
Uh-huh.
And so we wanted to include the letter
uh-huh.
or letters with our packet. That's why we haven't submitted.
Okay,
so
that's what, okay.
We're probably going to miss the November. I think they only meet if they actually have something to talk about,
okay.
And I don't think they do for this. So we'll probably get pushed to December, and then it's Christmas, though. I don't know. It may be December, it may be January. We've waited, you know, 10 months already, so we can wait a few more. But we do want, if y'all are going to do that, we would like to include that in our packet. And if we can possibly get on a December docket, we would like the letter from you guys maybe the second week of November. That's too much to ask, so that we can put it all together before Thanksgiving and send it off. And then I don't know how long it takes. Because we also are going to have to put that big yellow sign that notifies everyone
yeah.
what we're doing and there's a hearing and everyone wants to protest or come and talk about it. And so there's a waiting period for that, like 10 days or something. So that's kind of our timeline. It's, I don't know if that's what you're doing. I'll look at the date and see. That's it. I just thank you all so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I hope you can see how passionate we are about it.
Absolutely.
I know I've talked a lot. I've talked really fast. But I feel like we have a really compelling reason to get 5 feet of variance. Do you have any questions or can I clarify anything?
Yeah. Would you just look at attachment 8? That's the whole reason we're trying to preserve this wall. Attachment 8.
Oh, did I skip the wall?
Yeah. The wall.
The wall.
The variance one piece here we're trying not to cover up because we can't build structurally and preserve that wall. That wall is going to have to be covered supporter roof. So that's our whole goal of this, to preserve that beautiful wall right here.
Yeah. Okay.
So what I do want to clarify for you all is that, first of all, this is just a report or a discussion item, so you can ask for clarification, but that we can't make a motion or do anything. What she's requesting is for you on your own time to write a letter of support. So I don't know if you want to provide an email address for them to send
yes.
that to.
Yes.
So I'll let her do that. But that would be probably what I would say is that, you know, because it's not an action item, and you can't have a quorum of something and get together as a group afterward.
So we can't do it as a body?
Can I?
No.
I want to ask an ugly question. Okay. You said golf cart. Can you get a two-car garage in your space?
My car will park, will be tandem with the,
But I mean, if they don't give you this, this 5 foot, can you still get a two-car?
No.
No, you cannot get a two-car garage in the space?
Mm-hmm. Without losing that wall.
What we would do, unfortunately, is attach it to the house. Because we need a garage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Makes sense. Go ahead.
Just a question, I guess, for legal. I assume it would be improper for two of us to agree to the text of a letter? Or
Okay. You can't have a quorum agree to it, so it has to be less than a quorum. Two of you right at the moment is less than a quorum, but if you talk to anybody else on this commission about it, then you'd be violating the open meeting law. So don't tell me about it. And don't tell anybody else about it.
I tried to give you words in here, like
historical integrity of property.
You might want to give that email address, and I'm kind of...
Let's go ahead and get... Yes. Go ahead and...
Could I, as an individual... Attend the hearing and
absolutely.
Support it. Oh, yeah.
Everybody can. Awesome. Yeah. We're going to hopefully have our architect there, too.
Yes. You may.
I just had a curiosity question on the historic designation is relatively strict on the criteria. If you have minor alterations, you could maybe miss that designation and become a contributing house. So are the current windows in?
That's a great question. And the door.
Yeah. So, I mean, so that's just a heads up. I mean, that I was looking at this, and it looks like a phenomenal house.
Yeah.
Mountain backdrop.
The front door is fantastic, but, you know, clearly did not exist in 1959. So, I mean, that may toss it out.
Yeah, so it may go into it as still a contributing house on the register. Or, unless you, I don't know if you can... retrofit it back to the historic look. I don't know if it works. But.
Yeah, we have pictures of the door that was in that carved. Honestly, it would be super dark if we change that from glass to a solid. I'm not sure we do that, honestly. It's one of the things we love about the house is the
light.
Right.
It's a better visual with the.
And they did, the former owners did all of that work.
Okay, you want to give us
yours? Yes, so my email is T A L E X 1989@gmail.com.
Can we have notification of when the meeting is? Is that legal?
It's normally the fourth Tuesday of the month at 3 o'clock. But
scheduled for the 17th of December.
But they move around a lot.
Yeah, they do. Because it all depends on what they have on the agenda.
They don't have anything. Like this November, I think, is already been canceled.
Yeah.
So if you go to the town's website, there's a meetings and agendas, and you can kind of keep up with it.
Okay.
You can look on there, and there will the Board of Adjustments is on.
Mr. Sullivan, did you say when it was?
It's scheduled.
December 7th.
For December 17th at 3 o'clock.
Do you happen to know how much time they need, once I submit something?
I don't know the timeline, but... Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Did Patty say that she was unable to approve it administratively?
No,
and that you had to go to the Board of Adjustments?
Yes.
Or did she say she would, staff would not support the change at the Board of Adjustments?
She didn't tell me that. She did not give me a whole lot of hope, honestly.
I don't.
She wouldn't give me, like, oh, no, they're going to, yes or no. I mean, clearly she would do that. But I did not get the feeling that she was, like, super
positive
about it. But she did give me the packet for the appeal and, you know, gave me all the outline and stuff.
My understanding is the 5 criteria.
Yeah.
Right. I still see how it doesn't meet it, and I don't see, on my experience with the Board of Adjustments, that they would not agree that it meets it because of the historic nature of it. The guidelines are separate the garage. You're talking 5 foot. 5 foot variances are granted all the time by the Board of Adjustments for rear patios and side, particularly rear patios. As far as other neighbors have garages, this is not giving you any enormous right. The garage is a very typical thing. No impact on neighbors.
She did not give me the impression that she could do that. She basically said
she can't.
No, she can't. Staff writes a report and says whether they believe the conditions are met, and if so, why or why not. That report goes to the Board of Adjustments. They could disagree with the staff report, but it's an uphill battle. You ideally want a staff report
for sure
supporting approval.
Sure. All I've had is a verbal sit down with her.
Yeah. Meet with her more often before you submit.
Meet with her
more.
Meet with her,
but yeah. It's always a good idea.
I didn't know there was more I could say. Now that I do, I'm definitely
going to
know
the 5 criteria.
Yes.
Go in and talk about it.
Yeah.
I'm sure you did. I have a journal. Lenin, where's the public?
Yeah, it is a standard. I think it's 15 days. I don't think it's huge.
No, it's a lot. It's got to be long because you see them all the time.
It's a 15-day increment of some sort. 45 days, maybe?
But they have several.
Yeah.
So we may
have to go back and look.
I need mine.
I have to go back and it's in our... Somebody who has a booklet? It's in our... It's in our
transportation problem, so I've got it.
Okay. Thank you. So you would like these submitted to you by the week of the 18th of this?
Because I'm ready to submit.
Okay.
Sooner the better.
I can shoot you guys an email and you letting... Because I have that information. I just don't have it here. So how many days the yellow sign has to be out in front. So.
Okay. Thank you very
much.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Listening to me.
Very thorough report. Thank you. Holy cow.
Yeah, you're prepared.
You're passionate.
Can we hire you?
I'm impressed.
So the last agenda item, number 5, department report.
Okay. So I'm going to start by correcting some misinformation that I gave you last month. I was corrected. Funds... that are made at the ranch, if they are made from funds out of the general fund. Okay, that was a lot of funds. They were made out of the general fund. So, like the Monster Mash, all of the money that created that event came from the general fund. So those all the funds created from that event have to go back in the general fund. If it's donated, like somebody paid for the jumping castles and they earmarked all money made off of the jumping castles to go into that steam pump ranch fund, that's when they can go in there. So just wanted to make that correction because I gave you guys misinformation last month. And then, but reporting on last month's attendance, so our meeting last time was after after the Monster Mash, so I gave you that number, but there was, I said between 6,000 and 8,000. I think it was near the 8,000 mark, but this time I said 7,000 just to be a little more neutral in the middle of those two numbers. But the hay rides that were starting on the 4th along with this and the 5th and the 11th and 12th and 18th had very close to the 500 mark, which is about what we could have for each and every ride. So the ranch was busy with people who were enjoying the historic stories that were told, as well as just the ambiance of the historic buildings and the character of the place, which, in my opinion, is one of the most important things we can do when we're holding events there, is make people love the location enough that they want to support things that fund the ranch. So, meaning future bonds or whatever might come up. And then we had a First Friday concert, and I'll give you the dates of the next First Friday concerts, because I would love you all to come just see them, just see what they're like. But those generate about 500 people just coming to listen to music, and again, soaking in the ambiance of that that we've created by making sure that there's beautiful grass and the paint job that we did approved a year ago. And so those kinds of things are really bringing in numbers, which again have the potential of eventually creating funding for the ranch. And that those 500 in attendance is consistent since our very first one. I mean, I'm always, will they come back? And they do. So that's a neat thing. The next one will be the first Friday in February, and then the first Friday in March, and the first Friday in April. And that'll culminate this year's First Friday concerts at Steam Pump. And then speaking of events, our Celebrate Oro Valley this year will happen on April 11th, 2020. And last year, Susan was, besides Gail, who absolutely manages a whole sector all by herself, so I'm not expecting her to be at the HPC tent because she's helping with art projects that have to do with the ranch and the history. But I'm going to need you guys to step up because Susan was our one staff member that was there last year. So just giving you enough advance notice that maybe we can do a little rotation and have people stand in that booth, because we expect that town input, because we sure put you in an area with all town staff that was very fun. Games and interactive things, and it will continue
police
to be fun.
Police dogs and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Puppies.
It's a very enjoyable area, and that's where you will be again, and so we'll do a rotation. And then we have a meeting this week with members of the Historical Society, meaning town staff, my staff, to review the agreement for them to use the office space that is the northeast room of the push house as their office. So hopefully we're nearing an agreement on that. And then we have a meeting this week. Okay, and then the February meeting. I only made that note. So because of work that's being done here on Town Hall, and because they now have installed the mechanisms so that our new system is on camera and the recording, we have no place to hold our February meeting because other organizations are. So it needs to be an action item next month because it can't be this month. So hopefully one of you will bring it up on future agenda items, but we need to discuss and have that as an action item, what to do with that February meeting, because something has to happen, because there's no place to hold it.
How big a room do you need?
Well, it isn't that. We have to have a room that has all the proper equipment,
okay,
and there
so
isn't
it's not
one.
Not just the site.
Public meeting.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we'll have to have it as a discussion item so that you guys can either vote for a different date or vote for skipping. So that'll be kind of your option. So we'll save that for next month when it's our agenda item. And then we have been in discussions with the Historical Society for a map design for Steam Pump Ranch. And those designs are moving forward. We came to an agreement in a meeting this month, and that's funded by them and by proceeds from their Z Mansion event. And is kind of exciting, so it'll be a directional sign and the buildings will have numbers, so that's very cool that that's moving forward. And then I received a request from a homeschool group for a field trip on March 13th, and I'll be working with the Historical Society, but if anybody wants to be present and kind of see how those all go, that's enough in the future to mark it off your work date. So that's the end of my report.
Thank you, Lynn Ann. Okay,
wait,
if you...
Wait,
go ahead.
You read that part about events at the ranch that are specifically for fundraising to stay at the ranch? Can you clarify that just a little more?
Okay, so last month I said, you know, we have a fund in the general fund that allows for money to go into it to be respent back on the ranch. It's kind of like it's coded so that they know that it's come in. But that particular spot in the general fund for that has to be put in when the funds generated are not through town staff. Through the general fund. In other words, it was a budgeted item for us to hold the Monster Mash. That was all town proceeds that spent the money to make the event happen. And so those particular funds can't go into that piece of the general fund. They have to just go back into the general fund as revenues generated at Steam Pump Ranch. So just to let you all know the good of that is one of the things that happens is at the end of every year, it's a report how much was made at the different parks and what. So it will always show that those revenues were generated at the ranch and those numbers are all captured. That helps the commission look at those and identify the fact that Steam Pump Ranch is a generating, financial generating property and has a greater likelihood of getting them to then put in money when it's not a property that just loses. But should elements of an event like the Monster Mash be funded by outside groups, in other words, somebody say, we're going to sponsor the, as I used before, jumping castles, and we want our money back, but every bit of the proceeds that are above and beyond what we spent, we want to go in a fund that goes is it spent, should there be a need, is immediately available for the ranch, doesn't have to go through. That's when those funds can go in that. That little pocket is that, like if there's a shortfall of something that we have budgeted for and we budgeted slightly less than we need, then we can go to that number. So it just helps me remember to ask for, you know, outside agencies.
So
to come
let's
forward.
Just say... SAG, Southern Arizona mm-hmm. Arts Guild, mm-hmm. or somebody wanted to put on a plein air event, right? They just go through the normal channels, like you're going to have a wedding there or uh-huh. something, right? And uh-huh. contact the town, park,
right.
okay, to set up and get the weekend or whatever.
Right.
Right, and then say they could put it on and all proceeds would go to the restoration of the ranch. Is that...
Yes, they could. There is a rental fee that they would pay that goes to the general fund. But all the proceeds, they can earmark where they can split them with the guild and the...
Thank you very much.
Yeah. That's an outside agency that can do that, yes. And anybody can do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a fundraising right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
Anything else? Any other questions? Okay. So future agenda items. So we'll add the action item regarding the February 2020 meeting, whether that's rescheduled
or
canceled,
yeah.
whatever we want to do with it.
Retreat?
It could be a retreat. It'll be open, an open item. Any other future agenda items? Anything you want to see returned to the agenda for future action or discussion?
Did you raise your hand now?
I think I'll wait and talk. Mr. Chairman, I think we had some discussion earlier regarding a possible gathering of more information on a guest property that I've been involved with a client. They're doing the before and after, and maybe I should talk to you, Lynn, a little more about that as far as putting it together, something the commission may be interested in doing a visitation, because he's done a major renovation, purchased property about a year ago, has done a major renovation with the appropriate people that would approve that, especially to the inside, which is kind of, but anyway, maybe an informational thing that we could do, or
So to clarify what he and I spoke about prior, because he mentioned the same thing to me, many years ago, the commission asked for a field trip, which has to, you know, we have to go through the process of saying there's going to be a quorum outside of here, a field trip to Honeybee, and then a group went, and I gave them a tour of Honeybee with help from Desert Archaeology. And so this, we there would be some work that would have to go into this. So maybe if we, if you all say you're interested, and probably that has to be on a future agenda item, say that you're interested, then we can do the research to see if we can get people who know about Just Homes to give us a Just Homes tour.
And I can do the research as well.
Yeah, those would be in and out of Oro Valley, so it would be a little day trip. But it, we would need to, that would have to be on a future agenda item if you want to request staff to do the research to maybe have a field trip. So that, that's what you're asking.
I think it'd be a wonderful opportunity. He has before and after pictures, and he's gone about it the right way. So I just don't know what the commission would like to do. Just throwing it out there.
So you need to, if you want it to be a future agenda item, you need to correct
that. Let's make
it
a future agenda item.
Okay. And I just want to say, I know it can seem frustrating at times about how we can't talk about certain things because it's not a, but it's, the process is to keep the public informed so that we all are on the same page and there's no surprises and people can attend. I know it can seem irritating, but just know every community across the country is doing the same thing. Okay, our next meeting is December 2nd, 5 p.m. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
I'll make a motion to adjourn the meeting.
A second?
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thank you guys very much.
Okay, now I'll